Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, Mr. Eric Clapton wailing up on behind us there on guitar. Somebody who Joan Pride thinks a lot of, right, Joan?
I love him.
Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, after all these weeks, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's good to have you back.
Thanks. It's wonderful to be back. I'm thrilled.
Go ahead and say it, Joan.
A nightmare, no.
Oh, no. That's not,
a dream come true.
I can see that. Yeah. You missed me, didn't you, Joan?
Desperately.
So tell the audience what you did.
Well, we went to New Orleans, and we went to the Sugar Bowl so that my husband could see his beloved Virginia Tech Hokies lose to Auburn.
Yeah. It was a good game, though.
It was a good game. It was a heartbreaking game at the end, but it was a good game.
Yeah. How is the Hokie doing? Is he okay?
Well, he's in mourning right now.
He is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he still goes over it. And if you were to walk on my house tonight, he would start talking about it. Every once in a while, we'll be sitting around watching TV or something. He'll just spontaneously start talking about it.
Spontaneous combustion. He'll
pop out.
You know,
if we had just made that field goal, if the
play had gone this way instead of that way, maybe we would have won. That kind of thing.
Oh yeah, I'm getting a lot of that.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah. And what's worse is we taped the game, so at some point we're going to have to relive it.
Oh, yeah. Well, now you can have it forever.
Oh, and relive it over and over and over again.
For years, unless you could accidentally tape a soap over it or something.
No, then he would file for divorce. I can't do that.
Hey, Joan, you guys had your 10 forecasts that you published this week. For the new year, and interestingly, some of them corresponded, or at least overlaid, some of my predictions.
Ooh, well, I think we were a bunch of gloomy gusses here in our predictions.
I think you're right. I was really
Were you gloomy?
No, I was not. Well, no, I don't. I wasn't gloomy. I was just kind of agnostic on most of mine. But you guys were kind of gloomy, weren't you?
Well, I'm just not looking. Now that I've read all these, I'm just not looking forward to this year.
I know. Yeah. Well, the first one is energy prices. Tell us what you guys predicted there.
Well, we say new energy price highs in the spring, but we kind of hinted that the worst may not be over because we say that that's the best case scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it sounds like we're not going to see relief anytime very soon.
Well, and worse, you predict that gasoline will average $2.15 a gallon. What part of New York City are you guys talking about?
I wish that's where we were talking about, but. Certainly in my area of the country, we're still hovering around $2.
On national average, I think that's too high, $2.15.
Well, boy, if it gets that high as a national average, that's pretty scary.
That is scary. So
because as you point out, in New York City, it's going to be considerably higher. And here in the Washington area, I think we would probably, if the national average was $2.15, we'd be more like $2.20.
Right. I do think fundamentally, though, you're right, the energy prices are going to remain high. And I think we're going to be seeing that for a long time to come for the demand reasons that we know about, for the instability in the region reasons.
Right.
And also, Joan, we can never forget this because this is a reality. We're now having to go deeper into the earth for those reserves.
That's right.
I read a report. I think I mentioned to you once before that we have been going as low as 10,000 feet over the last several years for reserves. Now we're having to go into up to 30,000 feet for the reserves deep. And we have the technology to do that now. Well, we didn't have it before, but it is more expensive.
That's right. And you know that there are still those people who wonder. I'm not saying I'm one of them, but there are those people who wonder if we're beginning to exhaust our supplies. And when I say that, it doesn't mean we'd be running out in a couple of years. But, you know, in 50 years, there could be a problem.
Well, one of the things about it, it's not renewable, is it?
That's a good point.
It's not a renewable resource.
Right, right.
I wonder, one of the things I wonder about is, you know, when you take that much out of the earth, what goes in its place?
Ooh.
You know, I mean, think about it. Does the tectonic universe of our earth, you know, down there below the sea, below the crust, when you remove that much of what's down there, does that affect the overall, you know, does it turn this orange into a prune, you know? What,
right, or is that contributing to maybe earthquakes or something like that?
One has to wonder.
Yeah, one has to.
You know, I think one does, though, don't you, John?
One is right now.
Now, I think you guys are a little too gloomy on your oil prices, but that's okay.
How do you feel about our economic growth forecast?
Well, I think you're just a little gloomy on that one, too.
See, I'm telling you.
Tell us about it. Tell us about it.
Well, I don't think it's that bad. I think 3.5% growth for the year is not so bad. Now, that is a full point less than last year, but given inflation and other things that would be going on and tough situation in Iraq, it's not that bad.
I don't think 2004 is going to be 4.5%, Joan.
That'll come in higher?
I think it's going to be closer to 4 for the year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you guys are off about a half a point there. But the thing is
we say nearly 4.5. Maybe we should have rounded down.
Well, and I think that, and I predicted 4%, but the reason I think, do you guys think that it's going to be, that the conditions are going to be, well, I'm not sure what I see that's going to be worse about 2005 than 2004. I mean, 2004 was a pretty tough year. That's when we had the real shock of the oil prices.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I would have thought that the increase in interest rates would be the big concern.
That may be, but I don't think that's going to cost us all that much.
Okay.
But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how. At least we have a record of it now. We can compare a year from now. We can compare our records. That's for
sure.
Oh
boy!
number three, a worsening situation in Iraq. Gloomy Gus, what about
that? Boy, that is very gloomy.
Yeah.
And of course, this is all centering around the planned elections for January 30th,
mm-hmm.
And that is really the goal of the insurgency in terms of what they're trying to disrupt.
Well, one of the things you guys say is that obviously we've known that the insurgencies were going to be peaking before the elections, but you guys say that it's not going to stop after the elections.
Well, because there are more. Well, I would think unless there's some method for completely eradicating the insurgency, they're going to keep up, and they will, as we say, have a new goal after the elections. Apparently, there's a new constitution that I guess will need to be ratified at the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
and so that will be yet another thing that they will try to disrupt.
Well, what this leaves out, though, Joan, is any sense of nationalism that the peace-loving Iraqis, the peace-wishing Iraqis, will have once they get a chance to vote and have their own government. You know, that we've missed that side of the equation, which I think could be significant. 20 after, we'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Lessingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, I want to get back to this thing, this third forecast that Kiplinger made this week, a worsening situation in Iraq. You guys say insurgents will increase their attacks until the election, but it will also continue after the election. One of the things, see, to me, and this is something that a lot of people are falling into, Joan, and I'm going to use the example of outsourcing as an analogy. People complain about outsourcing because they don't like the jobs going overseas. But I understand that. But what the opponents of outsourcing, the talking heads against outsourcing, fail to remember or fail to include in their equation is the increased standard of living, the improved standard of living that American consumers get from the goods that are made in those countries. And so there's the other side. You've got to have, you know, the equal and opposite reaction thing. You got to add all that up. And in terms of Iraq, we haven't taken into consideration, a lot of times people don't take into consideration the fact that after the elections, all we have to have to have peace in Iraq is for the average Iraqi to rise up and say, hey, we're not going to take this anymore. This is our country now. We voted. We elected a government. We're going to live by that government, and we're not going to help all these insurgents.
Well,
that hasn't happened yet.
That's easier said than done, though, if there is still a climate of fear in the country, and if you have the Iraqi police force itself being attacked and murdered.
Right. Well, the whole thing that people have said all along is that Iraq will be successful when Iraqis are prepared to fight for their country, when they are prepared to fight. And so what we'll have to see is how do the Iraqis react once they have had the election.
Right.
And I'm hopeful about that.
Well.
So anyway, all right, let's go to number four.
All right.
The dollar. Joan, you're our currency expert
on
the Brain Trust.
You must be desperate if I'm the Forex expert. Well, it's funny. The dollar's actually been strengthening lately. It's on a roller coaster ride these days. So
yeah.
It's very interesting. But we're saying that the low dollar will continue and help to slow growth in the trade deficit, which is, you know, all of these things have a double-edged sword. You can make a good case for wanting a strong dollar, but you can also make a good case for wanting a weak dollar for completely opposite reasons.
Right. Well, the thing is we wouldn't mind a weak dollar so much if we could get the Chinese to do, which is another part of this forecast that you guys make. If we could get the Chinese to float the yuan, their currency,
right,
and not peg it to the dollar, we wouldn't mind so much, because then we could improve our balance of trade, couldn't we?
Well, that may be coming down the pike, it sounds like.
You guys are saying that, although yeah. I forecasted that the Chinese would not float their yuan this year.
Ooh.
Their yuan this year. So, you know, we seem to be at cross purposes on our forecast.
Well, we're not saying that you're saying that it would not do it in 2005 or 2004.
I said in 2005 that the Chinese would not let their currency float. They would keep it pegged to the dollar.
At least until 2006.
All I'm talking about is 2005.
Right, okay.
Right. And so you guys say it might, you guys don't say that they're going to let it float. You say they might let it trade in a very narrow range.
Well, that's a little bit of a float.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, yeah. I agree with you. And I see, and you may be right. And let me say this. I hope you are right. This is one of those predictions that I hope I'm wrong about. Because I think that's a good thing. But the problem with the Chinese letting their yuan float is it hurts their business. It hurts their economy, which is so fragile right now, it can't afford to be hurt.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
Even though it's growing, it's a little bit of a house of cards, isn't it?
To a certain extent, sure.
Especially because of their credit environment. They studied the Japanese book of loaning money over there. and now they got a similar situation to what the Japanese have,
which, as
you know, has caused Japan to have about a 15-year recession over there.
Oh, right. Sure.
Yeah. All right, let's move to number five. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, this is sort of interesting. We're saying that a lot of items will cost more, but we're also going to see a lower inflation rate, which I guess for me is a very confusing way to put it. I think one of our biggest problems, again, is going to be energy prices, and that's what's going to keep the overall outlook not as good as it could be otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the lower inflation rate would happen if energy prices come down a little bit, because that's really where the inflation is right now, isn't it?
Exactly, right.
Where the majority of the inflation rate is, because of the because of the higher rates, most of the inflation increases that we've got right now have been primarily because of the energy prices, but you guys say the inflation is going to be more like about 2.5%.
Yes, that's right.
Now that's going to affect interest rates, isn't it? The inflation rate.
Well, that's what we're saying, and we're looking at, and I'll be curious to know what your thoughts are, but we're saying about 5.5% for 10-year treasuries by the end of the year.
For the long term. I'm not very good at tracking the long term, but the short term, I think, will be, if inflation is at 2.5, the short term Fed funds rate will go to 3 this year. 29 after, stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
inspire small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. But there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingay, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com, and I hope you'll remember to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes every week by email. And this week, if you subscribe, you'll get my 2005 predictions, and you'll get a thought that I had on what will happen. Actually, another prediction, actually kind of a bonus prediction on what could happen at the as we work hard to deal with the tsunami devastated parts of Southeast Asia. And so that's all part of that newsletter as well. Joan, what a nightmare that is down there in Indonesia and Thailand and India and Sri Lanka. Just a horrible nightmare. I heard a guy last night talking about being up in the second floor building of the building they were in, the second floor, and it literally blew the windows out at the second floor and caved in a concrete wall and washed everybody out of the room.
Well, and what's heartbreaking is now they're saying that if they could have just given people even 10 minutes warning,
right,
they could have saved, you know, untold
right.
numbers of lives.
And we're going to talk about that at the end of the thing. I don't want to preempt this, but I just when I was mentioning that, that's just a horrible thing. That in our hearts and prayers go out, our thoughts and prayers go out to all those folks over there, and so many people are contributing, and it's a great thing. Anyway, let's move on, Joan. You guys are not gloomy about stocks, though. What's up with that?
Well, we're never gloomy about stocks. You know us.
Number six.
Well, I like this prediction because I've been getting tired of this gloomy stock market. But we're saying that you'll have better returns than in 2004 because I think we said in 2004, I think we said high single figures. I think we said 9 or 10%. And now we're saying returns of 12 to 15%.
Well, Joan, one of the things I'm having trouble with, and this is my day to put you guys on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the stock market, that Wall Street and Main Street are not the same thing, but how do you reconcile those kinds of returns on stocks and a weakening of the economy, like in number two that you where you talk about a weakening of the economy?
Well, gosh, I don't know.
Anyway, I think that's interesting. But that'll be an interesting year if that works out. So you think that. That the stocks are going to be up 12 to 14%.
Well, again, here's one idea I have.
Okay.
Remember, stocks are a leading economic indicator.
Yeah.
So if stocks are good in 2005, I would think that that's a bellwether for 2006.
All right. I'm going to give you a good bailout pin for that one. That was a good one. Well, one of the things is that I actually predicted in my newsletter that that we would break the 11,722 mark for the Dow in 2005. I did predict that, so I think you guys and I are on the same page there. How about number seven? Let's talk about politics.
Well, I think this is interesting because we say an even more contentious U.S. political arena, and I think what we're talking about here is Republicans and Democrats being at loggerheads, but from what I'm reading in today's papers, the Republicans are already doing some infighting on issues like Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the contentious part, Joan, is not going to be so much between Democrats and Republicans as it's going to be between Republicans and Republicans.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think so.
I think you're right about the contentious, but it just may not be the obvious players.
Right, right. And the president has chosen to, you know, rather courageously deal with some tough issues. But in doing so, he's got a tough row to hoe, particularly with Social Security and tax reform.
Well, one thing about the difference between Democrats and Republicans is the Democrats do a really good job of keeping their people in line. The Republicans have a much more difficult herd of cats to take care of, don't they?
Well, that may be true. Maybe it's just because the Democrats have run all the conservatives out of the party. But,
well,
you know, they used to have a conservative wing that really clashed quite often with the liberal wing.
They used to have, but they don't anymore. All I'm saying is that in terms of being of towing the party line, the Republicans are not as good at getting that done as the Democrats are. And that's probably a good thing, Joan.
Well,
that's probably healthy, don't you think?
I guess so. It might be, but it
does make for a more interesting year, I think. I think you guys are right about that. I think there's going to be a lot of tension and contention in 2005 in the world of politics. When we come back, we're going to talk about rising health care costs. We're going to talk about the telephone and internet services, Joan. The Kiplinger folks have got a prediction about that. And then we're going to move over and talk a little bit about Social Security. We're going to talk a little bit about technology. And we're going to wrap up with some more information on the tsunami. It's 2012. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I encourage you to check out their website, which is very simple, kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. And that's where you can go to that site and learn a lot of stuff that's going on in the world and going on in our nation, things that will help you in your small business. But you can also find out about subscribing to their publications, which includes the flagship Kiplinger letter, and also their three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter. And, John, I think you guys ought to do an Iowa letter, don't you think so?
If you say so, sure.
Yeah,
because they just won their bowl game?
Yeah, there's some hot stuff going on in Iowa. I think you should have an Iowa letter.
Okay.
And also, they got a magazine. Joan, tell us about that magazine.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And there's a phone number, too, isn't there?
Sure is. And for any of our products, if you want to order them, call toll-free 800-544-0155.
Tell them I sent you, and they'll give you a 30-day free trial. And of course, if you forget to tell them that I sent you, they'll still give you the 30-day free trial.
That's right.
Joan, let's talk about number 8, employer health care costs rising at 10%. We don't like the number, but we like the direction. Is that the deal or the trend?
Well, as we say, although that's steep, it's not as bad as it has been, amazingly enough. And I think firms have gotten very savvy about trying to find cost savings, and we predict that they will be continuing to do that and really stepping that up this year.
We heard about one company that did that took the smoking room and made it into a wellness room. They eliminated the smoking room.
Right.
They don't have a place for people to smoke, and they made it into like a health room.
Makes a lot of sense.
How about that?
Yeah.
We got to focus on, you know, I had Dr. Bob Arnott on the show earlier this week. You know, that guy with used to be with NBC and CBS.
Oh, yeah.
He still
That's
is,
right.
I think. He's written a book on heart attacks, on heart health. And I said, Dr. Arnott, Dr. Bob, how many heart attacks are there in America in a year? He said 1.5 million.
Wow.
Yeah, he said
even in this day and age.
He said imagine 3 jumbo jets crashing every day.
Oh.
Think about that.
Wow.
And I said, how many of those heart attacks are preventable? You know what he said?
All of them?
1.5 million.
Oh, see.
How about that?
Wow.
And so all that's healthcare costs, Joan.
Gee.
There are a lot of people who are getting diabetes that don't have to get diabetes.
Yeah.
And there are so many things that we've got to work on preventing these diseases. We've got to work on not only being better, taking better care of our bodies. We got to be more self-insured too, Joan. That's another thing that's going to hold down the costs. And then, of course, we got to have those association healthcare plans.
Right.
That's the biggie. All right, let's move on down to number 9. What about China's investing in other?
Is this a misprint? Shouldn't it say burgeoning foreign investment in China?
Yeah. But this says buy China.
Buy China.
What's that all about?
Wow. Well, we're saying China's going to go out there and buy companies outside the country.
Mm-hmm.
because it's trying to build distribution networks, which makes sense.
Well, and Joan, if they buy enough companies, is that outsourcing?
Ooh,
if they go to Europe, if they own the company in Germany or the United States, and they take jobs to America, to China, is that outsourcing?
That's I guess turnabout is fair play.
We'll have to define that, won't we? Let's talk about number 10.
Ooh, this is good. Intense competition for telephone and internet services. So, and I hope that means that prices might go down. Well, we do say everyone will get everything cheaper.
Yeah, yeah, and that's good news for consumers. It's bad news for the legacy companies, right?
Oh, that's true.
The ones with the stranded infrastructure costs.
Right.
Which is going to be, and wireless. Look for wireless to really become a big deal in the future, Joan. It's even more so than now.
Yes.
And of course, that bypasses the hardwire, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Which is where a lot of the stranded costs are.
Yep.
All those poles and wires out there.
Exactly.
Joan, let's move over and talk about Social Security. What's Kiplinger's word on Social Security this year?
Well, we're saying that that Congress won't be able to avoid curbing benefits if it wants to overhaul Social Security. And that's very interesting in light of the story that's breaking this morning in all the papers, which is a secret White House memorandum which has leaked saying that that's exactly what we need to do, is curb benefits for future retirees. Mm-hmm. Now, that flies in the face of what some conservative Republicans are saying, folks like Newt Gingrich and Jack Kemp are saying, no, just get private accounts going. That's all you need to do.
I had Mike Tanner on the show earlier this week, who's with a Cato Institute. He's one of the foremost authorities on privatizing Social Security in the world. And he said that the plan for privatizing is fairly simple. Anybody under 55 gets a bond that they can trade, which represents the amount of money that they have in there, and they've contributed, I guess, to the system.
Okay.
Then 6.2%, the amount that they put in, the employees put in to the system, they can sign an affidavit, so to speak, sign a contract, that they'll put that 6.2% into their own fund, But they also are, once they get that bond and they start diverting their money in their own account, they are able, they actually say they will not require the government to pay them any retirement benefits.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the key part of that, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
that the folks who take the personal accounts are willing to be out there on their own. Now,
right.
The other...
That's right.
Well, I got more to say about that.
All right, we're going to do that when we come back after these messages. Joan Pride is our guest, folks. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, you had some final thoughts on the Social Security issue.
I did, didn't I?
Yes, you've forgotten them, haven't you?
I lost my train of thought.
Well, I was talking about the different ways that are the fairly simple way that the system is going to be converted from old to new. And what all is going to have to happen? One of the things that nobody really disagrees about, except maybe for Paul Krugman, is that the system is totally demographically bankrupt. In about 10 years or so, we're going to have two workers paying the benefits of one retiree.
That's scary.
Now we've
got,
but now it's 3-1.
Right, but I guess my concern about accounts is, over the long term, it's a great solution to get people out of the system who can afford to be out of the system.
Right.
But in the short term, you have to come up with the money to transfer into these accounts.
Right. Well, those are going to be bonds. I'm not sure how the bonds are going to work yet. I haven't figured that out yet. I don't understand that yet. But here's the way I look at it, Joan. We got it. It's at some point in time, there's going to have to be some pain in order to fix the Social Security system. There's going to be some pain to do it.
Right.
It's going to happen. It can either happen now or it can happen in the future.
Now.
And I think we have a president, and I hope we have a Congress that has enough leadership in them to let's do it now. Let's fix it now. And let's get this thing behind us.
Well, people want to fix it, but the Republican Party is very split on how to do it.
You're right. But one thing about it, though, Joan, you have to admit this. Whereas in the past, it was considered to be the third rail, touch it and die. It has been touched, and nobody died yet.
Well, not yet, but it has. I don't think it's really been touched, I would argue.
But I don't think it's going – well, of course, you may be right, because the AARP is coming out four square against this, aren't they?
Right, because the president is saying, oh, let's create personal accounts, and everyone's saying that's great. But when you look at the fine print, as you point out, it means giving up something else to get those accounts.
Right.
And I'm not sure that the average American understands that yet.
Right. Joan, let's move on down and talk just a little bit about tech, about technology. All the way at the bottom, supersonic business jets are on the horizon. I bet you're excited about this, aren't you, Joan?
I can't wait.
Have you ordered your new one?
Cruising speeds of up to Mach 1.5.
Yeah.
And I can take 15 people with me.
Yeah, can I go? Can I be one of those people?
Well, I don't know. You'll have to pay.
$80 million a ticket.
I better start saving.
Yeah, you better.
Well, per plane.
That's right. I meant per ticket, but I didn't mean per seat. But 80 million a copy if you want to go Mach 1.5. Joan, let's move all the way over to the bottom of page 4.
All right.
And let's talk about what happened last week.
Good idea.
In Southeast Asia. 150,000, that's conservative, maybe by half. Maybe that many more they're predicting will die from the results of being a survivor of all that.
Right, and it's sad that it took something like this to get us talking about an early warning system, but that's exactly what we're doing now. I guess there's one already in place for the Pacific.
Did you know that? I didn't know we had early warning systems for tsunamis. Did you know that?
Well, I guess I just kind of assumed that if we could have them for hurricanes, we could have them for tsunamis.
I didn't know we had stuff in the water. I mean, hurricanes, we're doing that by satellite, but we got stuff in the water that's telling us about tsunamis.
Right, but that's the problem. It was only people didn't expect that to happen in the Indian Ocean.
Because they thought it was mostly in the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
And Joan,
right.
Apparently the cost of having this is not very much. Each one of the devices cost $250,000.
Wow.
I mean, for millions, it's going to take billions to recover over there. And for millions, you know, a few million, we could have had this over there. So maybe that's something that will be set up in the future. But Joan, tsunamis travel at 400 to 500 miles an hour.
That's amazing.
But even if you have 30-minute notice, if those people had, heck, Joan, if they had 15-minute notice, maybe the death toll would have been cut by who knows how much.
That's right.
But isn't it interesting to see how the big three countries, corporations, and citizens are turning out to help those people all over the world?
I think we're going to find that it's an unprecedented relief effort.
Yep, exactly. That's something that I wrote about, folks, in my letter this week. If you want to subscribe, you can find out about my thoughts on that. Joan Pride, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Thanks very much.
We'll see you next week. We'll do it next week.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Joan. See ya. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and everybody who's contributing, everybody who's gone over to Southeast Asia to help those people. You're my heroes, too. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.